We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Happy to be here with you again this week. We have a great show for you lined up for our Independence Day show. Tomorrow is Independence Day, July 4th. Last week we talked a little bit about maybe having Bill Federer on, and lo and behold, he's so gracious. I called him up, and he was gracious enough to talk to us. We have an interview with him lined up later on in the show. It's just always great to talk to Bill Federer. He's so interesting. You could turn the mic on and just let him go, and he can talk eloquently for hours on any subject on American history, and he did so for us, and we're going to have that interview for you a little bit later. But first, another small victory in Missouri this week. If you haven't been listening to previous broadcasts, Missouri is in the middle of a huge scandal, and this is huge. I mean, this is another one that should be on national news every day, and it's not, because we have, again, the executive branch of our government here in Missouri has committed a great faux pas and been working stealthily, hand in hand, with the federal government to implement Real ID. We have documents that show that Governor Nixon has been in cooperation with the Department of Homeland Security and the federal government trying to implement aspects of Real ID by way of our driver's license bureau. It's here across the state. And the legislature here in Missouri introduced some legislation. Senator Will Krause introduced some legislation, SB 252, which effectively put an end to all of that. And it passed the House and it passed the Senate, and it said effectively, you know, no more scanning of documents, no more photography.
Biometric
photography. It all goes away. And he signed it Monday. And that was a big deal. And all of the Republicans were you're going to hear the fireworks. Tomorrow's the 4th of July, folks. Tomorrow's Independence Day. It's been fireworks crazy. Signed the legislation on Monday, and the Republicans have been crowing like roosters, thinking this is a huge, huge victory for Missouri. You know, we got the governor to back down. We got him to sign this legislation. And all the while, there are hearings going on because the governor is neck deep in caca because of the things that he did to allow these things to go on. All of our license bureaus across the state have been outfitted with scanning equipment and biometric photography equipment. And now they have to stop using it all. So Caroline and I have had many conversations throughout the week on this issue, and I'm kind of, you know, I'm not thinking that this is such a huge victory, and there are a lot of questions left unanswered about this issue. And while we're all very glad that yet another piece of legislation has been passed in Missouri to uphold the privacy rights of the Missouri citizens, it leaves one to wonder, why did we need another piece of legislation to do this when we already had legislation in place that prohibited all of these things in the first place?
Right.
So
yeah.
I'm going to try to find that. I sent a media inquiry to Tim Jones and Senator Krause late last night. Haven't heard back from them as yet, but we had a lot of questions as to why, you know, there were a lot of, the bill passed, very good thing that the bill passed, but here's what the bill does not give you. It has no reporting assurance in the bill to assure the citizens of Missouri that the scan data that's already been taken place over the last six or eight months is going to be destroyed. They're supposed to destroy it. There's nothing to require them to do it, though. I mean, the law says that they have to destroy it, but how will we ever know that it's going to be destroyed? And my question to the legislature is, are they going to follow up with legislation in December, January, to assure the people of Missouri that there's going to be some accountability attached to this situation, or are they just going to have these hearings and decide that the governor didn't do anything wrong and now we have this legislation? I mean, I'm thinking this is another piece of Yankee Doodle legislation, more or less, you know, regardless of the fact that we have, you know, we have something that says that they're not supposed to do it. Nothing that says that the information is destroyed. Nothing that says that the biometric photos are destroyed. Nothing that says that the software is going to be disabled. So if you go in tomorrow, or not tomorrow, if you go in on Friday to have your driver's license renewed, how do you know that they're not taking biometric photos of you?
Right. Well, and the thing that was pointed out was, you know, all the cameras are digital, so it's not so much the camera, it's the software they use. And it's like, if you go into your, you know, local office to get a driver's license, how are you going to know what software they use, you know?
Well, you know, and that's just semantics. You know, it doesn't matter if it's digital or if it's not digital or if they use software, if they don't use software. The long and the short of it is they're not supposed to be taking biometric photos. And I don't care how it gets done, you know, whether it's through software or digital cameras or whatever, you know, that's a bunch of baloney. There needs to be some kind of accountability attached to it to make sure that these photos are not being taken, you know.
Right.
And they also need to remove MorphoTrust from the situation. You know, they're sending all of this information to MorphoTrust, and MorphoTrust is sharing it with Homeland Security. You know, they used to be able to take your information at the counter, take your picture, and spit out a license there, and you were done in 10 minutes. And now it's going off-site to a third-party agency who's sharing it with God knows who, and you don't know anything about what's going on. And there was nothing in that legislation to stop that either, and nothing in the legislation to bring that back to over-the-counter production of driver's licenses.
Right.
So all of those questions have been sent to House Speaker Tim Jones and Senator Will Krause, the sponsor of SB 252, and have yet to hear back from them. When I do, if I do, I'll let you know one way or the other. I'll be happy to print any comments that they want to send to me. I may not agree with them, but I'll be happy to print anything that they send to me, and we will put their views out there. But until then, I think that there's a lot of information that still needs to get out about this issue, and you know, stop crowing about it, because I don't think it's as big of a victory as they're trying to make it out to be. I think it's a little bit of, I think we have 2014 elections coming up, and I think what they're trying to do is set the situation up to where they can campaign against Governor Nixon on any issue that comes or goes over the next couple of years and in the past. And I don't know that the people's liberties of Missouri are going to be any better off for it. It's great fodder, you know, it makes great campaign speeches, but I don't know that we're going to be any better off than we were when we started, except that we'll have a lot of Republicans crowing about it.
Right. And the other thing that we've got to keep an eye on is, you know, Governor Nixon vetoed the Anti-Agenda 21 bill.
Right.
But, you know, we have majorities in the Missouri House and Senate, so we should be able to override his veto. And if we don't, I don't know what, you know, it's going to be saying about our Republicans in Jeff City.
Well, here's the thing. I cannot wait for the veto session to start. I think we need to watch these folks like hawks, because there are a lot of bills that have gone through and that were vetoed by the governor. The tax increase bill, the tax decrease bill was also vetoed by the governor. Now, you know, it's that one is the one I'm going to be watching real close, because we know, I mean, we've watched the Republicans chase after the Chinese money before, and they love it, you know, and this is a huge tax decrease over a period of time, and funding the government is always an issue. I'm just, they're going to be dancing. They're going to be really dancing, trying to explain that if they don't veto that bill, or if they don't override that bill in the veto session.
Right.
Plus the Agenda 21 bill, you know, glad that we passed the Agenda 21 bill, and I know that it was modeled off the Alabama legislation, but again, there's no reason not to override it. If they do override it, there's no teeth in the bill. There's no penalty. There's no nothing. So I think that would be another great one to see some follow-up legislation in the next session. You know, how are they going to beef that one up, especially since we just came through this big deal with the Blue Way.
Right.
So
yep.
I haven't heard, I mean, I'm sure that there were quite a few people that were involved in the Blue Way issue. You know, Agenda 21 people involved in the Blue Way issue, but haven't heard from them. Would kind of like to hear from them and how they feel about this legislation and how that went by. I'm not quite sure how that legislation would have affected the Blue Way issue had the Blue Way not been rescinded. Do you have any idea, Caroline?
No, actually, I don't think I've ever actually had a chance to go in and read it, so I'm going to have to do that. But I know they had said, well, you know, even if Governor Nixon did sign it, that it wouldn't be retroactive, you know, because we only had until July the 9th to voice public, you know, opposition to the Blue Way designation. So, you know, the thinking was that the Anti-Agenda 21 bill, even if Governor Nixon signed it, wouldn't go into effect until August, and that it wouldn't be retroactive. So I'm not really sure it would have done anything to affect the Blue Way, you know, anyway. So.
Right. Well, folks, we do have a great show lined up for you tonight. We are supposed to have with us Emmanuel Goldstein. He's got a great website, and he's got some initiatives set up for the grassroots and the Patriot Movement to help you kind of get involved and engaged on a different level than maybe you've seen before. And as soon as he calls in, we're going to put him on. And a little bit later on, I said that we're going to have Bill Federer on, and we will. But before that, I don't know if you all remember, we had an issue not too long ago with the Dollar Heights family. They're farmers in southwest Missouri who were raising rabbits, and they were roundly attacked by the USDA, fined huge amounts of money for not having the correct paperwork to be able to raise rabbits on their farm and to sell their rabbits. Big, big deal. I mean, they were going to fine these people like $1 million. It was huge. I mean, it would have put, they were, you know, they were just doing a little tiny family business. This was not the bulk of their family business, and the USDA just went after them, and they had to fight this out in court, and it was a big deal, and they ultimately won, but they would not have, I mean, their family and their lives would have been ruined had the grassroots not taken hold of this issue as well, and made it known to the general public about what was going on, you know, the huge oppression coming down from the USDA and the federal government. There is another situation brewing in Michigan. I just heard from John Dollarhite today. There is a family, the Bakers in Michigan. They're pig farmers, and they are raising a certain breed of pigs that the USDA, after the fact, has decided that this breed of pigs is not acceptable to raise as farm animals, and they are being fined $750,000, and I think they have a hearing coming up on the 12th of July. Anyway, Mark Baker is going to be on with us in a little while, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his story and shed some light. They're at it again. I hate to say it, you know, we won this huge, great victory with the Blue Way, and we're very happy about it. It was a monumental victory for the grassroots, but, you know, you have to be ever vigilant. You just can never stop watching your government because, you know, while they've left the dollar heights, they traveled up to Michigan and now they're after the Baker family. So I think we're going to take a real quick break. We're going to see if we can get Emmanuel Goldstein to call in. If not, we'll move on and we'll carry on with the show and we'll be back in a few minutes.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
So dear, for peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Hi, we're back. This is Lisa Payne-Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. You are also listening.
Hello, Mark.
Hi, Mark. This is Lisa from Missouri Grassroots Radio. We ran a little short on our last segment. Can you talk to us now?
Okay, I can hear you now.
Okay, I'm sorry. We ran a little short on our last segment, so we thought we'd just pick up a little bit early. If you
sure.
can talk to us now. We kind of gave the folks a little bit of a lead-in about your situation before the break. You guys are pig farmers in Michigan, and much like the dollar heights here in southwest Missouri, you guys are being attacked by the USDA. Why don't you start at the beginning and give me a little bit of background about your story?
Okay, well, we're not just pig farmers, we're kind of general purpose farmers, and pigs are one of the crops that we grow. And we started in on a different breed back in about 2008, and that's a Mangalitsa breed. They came in from Austria, and then things were going really good. We were building our market, figuring out how to raise these animals properly and healthily and all that stuff. And then in 2011, I was informed by one of my chefs that our pigs were now on the invasive species list.
What is that?
And when I inquired about it with our ag commissioner, and he said, yeah, the Department of Natural Resources has come out with a list of characteristics. There's 9 of them. And if your pig has even one of those characteristics, then it is feral. And just, you know, from high school, I remember that the word feral doesn't mean, you know, how a thing looks. It matters where it lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called the DNR, and they had a meeting to tell us the way it was going to be. And sure enough, they said if our pigs have any one of the 9 characteristics, then we had to depopulate them by April 1st of 2012, and I didn't think it was right, and so I talked with an attorney about it, and we refused the order, and then we sued the state for relief, and that was in March of 2012. And here we are, 2013, we still haven't been to court because the Attorney General's office keeps putting it off and putting it off. And we believe it's because they know they really don't have a case against us. You know, there's no way that animals that we raise behind our fences are feral. I mean, it's definitely
a... Well, that's my next question to you. I mean, you've got these animals penned. They're not running in people. They're not running off of your farm onto other people's farms. They're not destroying the property.
No, never happened. Never happened. We run a really tight ship, 80-acre farm, and pigs are just one of the things we do. And, you know, my wife has a vegetable garden, she also has a flower garden, and if I had pigs running around every place, you know, I'd be in real trouble. So I have to work pretty hard to keep them in.
I'm a city girl. Explain this to me, okay? How can you, okay, feral pigs, from what my understanding of what a feral pig would be a wild pig not being bred or raised or managed in any way by a farmer.
Yeah.
They are what exists in the wild. How can they have regulations against something that is wild if you have no control over it? I mean, you have control over these pigs.
Right. You're close on your definition, but a feral pig, like a feral dog, would be a pig that was once under the husbandry of human beings. So at one time it was domesticated,
okay,
but was either abandoned or escaped. And we see this, I'm in the north of Detroit, and we see this with dogs really bad, that people have to leave because the economy is so bad, and they just leave their animals, and the dogs pack up, and then they breed, and they have new species,
sure,
new breeds of dogs, and they are feral dogs.
Okay.
So a feral pig differs from a wild pig in that a wild pig, pigs, swine are only found in the wild in Eurasia. They're not found in North America. So hence the term Eurasian wild boar. You'll hear that term thrown around quite a bit. And it's a proper term. It's what you would call a Eurasian, you know, swine that is in the wild, kind of like here in Michigan we have wild deer and we have wild chipmunks. They
sure
never belong to people. They just live in the woods. I mean, they just been here since it started, I guess.
And wild pigs do run across the United States. I mean, there are wild pigs. I know people hunt wild pigs. But
yeah. Well, those would be feral pigs, though. Those would be feral.
Okay.
Because at one time they were domesticated. Here in the States, especially in like Florida and Texas, they brought pigs here in like the 1530s.
Mm-hmm.
Conquistadors brought them. And the way they did swine back then is they just turned them loose and let them forage for themselves out in the woods and swamps. And then they'd go out and they'd hunt them when they needed meat. But swine are a pretty social animal. Like if one of our gates gets left open,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, a bunch of our pigs get out, they don't head for the woods. They come looking for the human beings.
You know,
the human beings are the sources of food, as far as they know.
Mm-hmm. And none of this applies to what you guys are doing with your pigs?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Okay, so how much is the USDA after you for, Mark?
Well, it's not the USDA; it's the Michigan Attorney General's Office. They're after me for $700,000. I got a notification last Thursday. They want me to cough up $700,000. They're fining me $10,000 per pig that I have here. This has been going on for almost 2 years now, and you know we've had to pare our animals way, way down because they sanctioned us. They kind of put an embargo against us. They have, you know, some law on their side, and they said that we cannot sell our pigs in the state of Michigan. And then they threatened the people that we would sell them to, our customers. They said, if you receive one of Baker's pigs, we'll fine you $10,000 per pig.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Any of my customers that had any courage lost it real quick when that dollar figure was thrown in front of them. So they're
strong-arming you. They're strong-arming your customers. They're making it impossible for you to make a living selling your pigs.
Yeah.
And they're making it impossible for you to keep them.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a
how
war
many pigs
of
are we talking?
Well, I'm down to 70 right now.
So you can't possibly slaughter 70 pigs and do anything with that meat. That's too much.
Well, I could, but they went to our slaughterhouse and they said, don't take Baker's pigs.
So you can't slaughter them, you can't sell them, you can't keep them. What are you supposed to do?
We're looking forward to our trial August 27th and trying to keep the pigs fed so that, because if I, let's say that I were to depopulate my animals, let's say I were to kill them and push them in a hole, which is what they want me to do. And they want to be here to watch, too. They want to watch it while I do it.
What
but let's say
the
I did that.
That.
Oh, I know these people are way out of control. This is just off the charts. But if I did that, then I would have no standing in court because I would not have any of the, you know, said invasive species animals. And my pigs are, you know, they're Mangalitsa crosses. They're just an average-looking pig. But if your listeners get on the Department of Natural Resources website and look at the Feral Swine Initiative, or they call it the Declaratory Ruling, and then scroll down until they get to the 9 characteristics, they will see that those characteristics encompass every pig that's ever walked planet Earth. And they know this. The DNR knows this. It's really not their deal. They're just the people that were employed to do this.
So,
and you're probably thinking, why would the DNR care about what goes on a farm? And that was the question we had at the beginning. But, you know, we found out, just like a lot of government agencies, they're for sale. And in Michigan, we have what's called ALM, Ag Leaders of Michigan. And it's everything from poultry to federal dollars involved in there. It's like it's Greenstone Farm Credit Services. It's Michigan poultry. It's Michigan pork, Michigan milk, all the big industrial agriculture outfits. And they want, their end game, really, is to push all the small farmers off the land. And so this is just one, you know, avenue that they've taken. They went after pig farmers. And I happen to be one of them, but I'm also ex-military, and I know how to read. So when I saw the declaratory ruling, I knew it was some sort of wordplay that they were doing, you know, and if your readers read through it, they'll see, they'll come away confused, but that's the way they do it.
Are there other pig farmers in Michigan that are having the same problem that you're having? Because it sounds like they've just made it impossible for you to have pigs, period.
Yeah, well, there's 2,009 of us in the state of Michigan that raise under 500 pigs per property, and that indicates that we raise pigs what's called on dirt instead of in a confinement operation, which would be like a big, huge hog house that has 5,000 pigs in it.
Oh, my God.
You know, it's a terrible mess, but it makes money for the hog producers.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's a bad situation. The pigs are in their own manure, and, you know, they have to feed them lots of drugs and growth stimulants and all that stuff. So there's 2,009 of us that don't do that, that raise pigs outside on pastures.
Right.
And every one of those pastured pig operations is in jeopardy. But the way the DNR has worked this, pig farmers will call down there to Lansing, our state capital, and say, hey, what's the story with this? I hear Baker talking all about this declaratory ruling. And then they will say that, oh, no, we're only going after the Russian boar. Well, the Russian boar is also known as the Eurasian wild boar.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the pig that originates from Eurasia that all swine comes from. And so, you know, their claim that any pig that has any Eurasian blood in it is, it encompasses every pig on the planet right now. But they have somehow separated us that raise pigs out on the land out because they say our pigs could escape and they could become feral and they could spread disease and they could attack, you know, small children and scare old women. You know, but none of this has happened. This is all because it could happen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. So,
yeah.
The questions that are running through my mind are I can't slow down enough to get them all out. So, basically, I mean, obviously, very, very clearly, this is an attempt by the federal government to squeeze out the small farmer, family farmer, try to get rid of them. You know,
right now, I couldn't say federal government. I couldn't say that.
State of Michigan.
It's just state wieners at this point.
Why would the state, Well, because I just naturally think this, but why would the state of Michigan want to get rid of family farms if they're not being pushed by the federal government? That's kind of what, we don't know this, though. This is not something that we know for sure. But, okay,
well,
so.
I can give an explanation to that. The state of Michigan, like the Department of Natural Resources and the Michigan Department of Agriculture, they are merely the marionettes. You know, their strings are pulled by industrial agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And industrial agriculture finds its way right back to our old buddies at Monsanto. You know, they want to own everything that we need for food.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are world powers that encourage them because, you know, world powers seem to want to control the people and manipulate how our lives are going to go for us, you know.
Right.
And if they can control food, they can surely control us.
Well, that's the plan. And we have a state senator here in Missouri named Roy Blunt, who we talk about quite often because he has very special ties to the folks at Monsanto. He gets a lot of campaign contributions from them. So you folks here listening in Missouri, why don't you send Roy Blunt a little email and tell him how you feel about this situation that's going on in Michigan and how this maybe ties back to the Monsanto corporation and how they're maybe dealing with the small family farms in Michigan and maybe here in Missouri as well. This could happen here just as well as it could happen anywhere. Now, Mark, you're asking for folks to support you in your situation on the 12th. You guys have a trial coming up on the 12th, supposing that it doesn't get delayed one more time. What can people do to help you, Mark?
Well, the thing on the 12th is a hearing, and we're asking our local judge to grant us, where we demanded a jury, because they're threatening me with $700,000 and four mm-hmm. years in jail, just because I didn't do what they said. You know, they expect people to do what they say, you know. And so on that day, we go to our hearing at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Saukee County. It's in Lake City, Michigan, at the courthouse. But the next day, you know, I know people can't really travel that far for that, but the next day we're going to open up the farm. I have a pretty nice farm here. We're just going to open it up and roast some pigs, and then we're just going to do what we normally do. We don't do it all in one day, but we're going to butcher some pigs and butcher some chickens and just show our operation off and, you know, take questions and hang around with people and have something to eat. Just kind of a Saturday, really. Open up the swimming hole. And a lot of people have hung with us for almost 2 years on now, and I think a lot of people are coming because they just want to meet. And, you know, we know that this is not the last battle. This is one battle in a war.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that we look at it that way, and we need to unite, we need to network, we need to find out who's got what resources to battle these guys. I just saw an article this morning where Vladimir Putin said that if President Obama can't control Monsanto, it will surely mean another world war. And I think that is true. And the American people have been so stupefied, so dumbed down over the years that, you know, Monsanto has a good foothold here. And they'll keep feeding people poison as long as they want. This is one more, this little thing that we're going through is just one battle in a war. And so we're gonna have more.
Well, if they can take you down, they can take the rest of them down, too. So, folks, if you want to see your family farm stay healthy and productive and have a place in the country and in our economy, you need to stand behind these folks. So, folks in Missouri, send a nice little note to Roy Blunt. He's very close to the folks here in Monsanto. I'm based in St. Louis, where Monsanto is. So, let them know what's going on. You can go to bakersgreenacres.com, and you can take a look at the operation that they have there. You can see a family video there of the Baker family, and they talk there about their situation with the Attorney General in Michigan, and you can do what you can to help them out there. Mark, I hope that you will come back again and keep us updated on how things go for you. We really appreciate you coming on here tonight at such short notice.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure.
Okay.
Love to, anytime.
Thank you so much. We'll be in touch with you. Let us know how things go for you.
Will do. Thanks very much for having me on.
Okay, thanks. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk to Emmanuel about the Patriot Nation.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order, because the global order is changing again. And the institutions and rules that worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne-Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm here tonight with Caroline Miller. We're talking news and current issues. And tonight we have with us, every once in a while, we like to spotlight some patriot movements and some patriot groups here and find out what their mission is and find out how they're helping the folks get engaged. And we have Emmanuel Goldstein with us tonight of the Patriot Nation. And Emmanuel, is your partner also calling in, MD?
Yeah, he should be calling in any moment.
Okay, I think he's on the line, so we're just going to put him on. Hi. Hi,
hello,
is this MD?
There.
Okay, hi.
Yes,
thanks for calling in.
Is.
All
no
right.
Problem.
We, you guys started, from everything that I know about you guys, I haven't known about you for too long. We've kind of been exchanging emails for a couple of weeks. You have a website and a Facebook page, and you guys have been putting together some action plans for helping folks get involved and engaged. And basically, you guys are known as the Patriot Nation. And so tell me a little bit about what you guys have got planned and what are you doing that's different than the regular Tea Party-type organization?
Well, I think one thing that really is deep in me is social media. And I don't think that conservatives or Tea Party people use it enough. You know, we don't use it nearly as much as the liberal side does. I think primarily because, you know, we have other things going on in life, and a lot of times we're a little busier with real jobs and things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I started a new movement just this past week called I Protest. And right now it's just a Facebook event page. You know, you can find the same information on our website, too. But it encourages you to not only make phone calls and send snail mail, regular actual paper mail that people don't use anymore, to all of their congresspeople, also hit them on Twitter and hit them on email and hit them on Facebook. And the big thing with Facebook and Twitter, you can't deny it. I mean, they can wad a letter up and throw it in the trash, ignore it, same with a phone call or an email. But when you get things that are in the public eye, the same as protesting. You know, you get 100,000 people standing out there, you can't deny that. But if you do the same movement on a social media site with Twitter or Facebook and you just flood them with information, everyone's going to see people standing together. And it's not something where you need to rent a hotel room and pay for, you know, fuel to get there and all of these other expenses. You can do this virtually. You can do it from home, and you can do it every single day.
Okay, that sounds great. Okay, so tell me, though, I'm a little bit older than you guys. I'm a woman of a certain age. I'm trying to get in. I mean, I have a Facebook account. I'm trying to, my Twitter account's a mess. I don't even use my Twitter account hardly ever except just to float my articles once in a while. How do you reach people like me, you know, that are just, you know, technically stupid?
Well, that is definitely proving to be a little bit difficult. we started the website for a couple reasons. One, and probably the main one, is that Facebook is really limiting the reach of the conservative pages. They've even actually shut some down, which
right.
is pretty unfair. And the other reason is there's a lot of people that are older and even people that are younger than me even, that don't want to have any social media just because they don't want all that information tracked on them. So
mm-hmm.
we started the website, and, you know, you can go there, and it has a friending aspect, you know, like Facebook, where you can send messages back and forth and create groups, and there's a forum aspect to it. So, you know, that is, it's a little more user-friendly to do,
mm-hmm.
and it gives people another outlet to share, so they can share via email rather than share via Facebook or Twitter.
Okay, so how does the email thing work?
Well, on any of our posts or any page on the website, there's a link at the bottom that shows, you know, share it to whatever medium is popular. And I tried to put the most popular ones up. There's some others there that aren't quite as popular, and there's some that I didn't add that aren't quite as popular just because I didn't want it to get too busy and there to be too many links and be confusing. But basically you would just, you know, push the email button, and it would allow you to input, you know, whomever you want to send that to, and from there you go.
Okay, so you've got all the basic share buttons that most – now, websites I can navigate pretty easily. So you've got all the share buttons and everything down there. You can send it to – let's see, I'm on your website now, and I'm clicking around. You can do Facebook. You can do Twitter. You've got Pinterest and then share for emails. So, yeah, very good. And then all of the stumbled upons and the Reddits and the Gmails and all those things. So awesome.
Sure.
So basically,
yeah.
So can people share information with you via the website?
Yeah, there's a news tip section, and we're really looking for some help. We it's just myself and MD, and, you know, keeping up with a lot of the information that comes through and, you know, validating it and then posting it and, you know, fielding all the comments, we could really use some help. So if anybody out there wants to help in either creating original content and commentary mm-hmm. or just even on a moderation side, we would love to hear from you.
Do you guys link to other news sites? Like I write for Politichicks.tv and Examiner. Would you link to them and share their information
certainly.
As well? Okay.
Most certainly. We're building a partner side, which will have some sponsors, and it will have, you know, anybody that wants to be involved with us that fits our, you know, that's right along our lines. There's certain other groups out there that we won't affiliate with just because their core isn't where our core is.
So tell me about your core. Let's kind of backtrack there and kind of get to know what motivates you guys and what give us the reason why you started this issue.
I being MD, I'll tell you my first name. It's Matt. I started this back around July 4th of 2010, and I really didn't have any set goal as to what to do or how big it would be or anything. I basically started it so I'd have somewhere to vent my political frustrations rather than bomb everybody on my Facebook page with it. And in, I believe it was September or October of last year, Manuel came aboard, and he said, "Man, you really got something with us." And I was like, "Well, you know, I've got 3,400 members." And it seemed like overnight we went from 3,400 to well over 40,000 now.
Wow.
And basically, my whole goal was, you know, everybody, you know, they watch Channel 6 or Channel 4, you know, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 10 o'clock news, and they pretty much develop tunnel vision. in so much that they're only seeing and hearing what these mainstream sources are telling them. So there's all this other stuff. You know, I'm watching the news. I'm like, what about this? What about that? And people are, they're uninformed. You know, I'm watching videos, and they're asking kids that are in college, you know, what about this going on in Benghazi? And they're just like, what? You know, you might as well be talking about the latest donut shop. They have no clue. I'm thinking, this right here is what will lead to the downfall of America, because people are uninformed. And that's basically our goal, is to let people know there's more out there than just Fox News or, you know, NBC or whatever it is. You know, question everything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you're right. There, you know, there's not an – people – the really diligent person who bothers to go to several sources to get their news spends a lot of time. Caroline Miller is the most dedicated news junkie I have ever met, and she is very well informed, but she scours the internet all day long for information, and she gets it from every angle. Don't you, Caroline, pretty much? I mean, it's a lot of work.
Yeah. It is a lot of work. It's a full-time job. It's like, thank God I'm unemployed right now. I wouldn't have time otherwise.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, and the average person is not going to do that. So are you kind of billing this as a one-stop shop for a well-rounded news source?
I wouldn't say one-stop shop, because I tell everyone, you know, don't just take our word for it. We post the things that we are interested in and things we feel you need to know, but be diligent enough to go check it out for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are receiving messages from people, believe it or not, that are over in the sandbox, Afghanistan or Iraq, and they're telling us, you know, keep doing what you're doing, because your page is the only way we're getting news that we don't hear from mainstream media.
Wow.
So we're having an effect there. We're filling a void that other people aren't filling. And, you know, that's kind of puts a feather in our cap that, hey, we're doing a good thing.
Okay, so this is patriotnation.net, thepatriotnation.net. Make sure that it's the .net, because there's a .com out there. Go to thepatriotnation.net and check that website out. Let's talk a little bit about iProtest. I want to know a little bit more about that kind of situation and how that works.
Sure. So the Facebook page, I think if you just search for iProtest, you'll probably
mm-hmm.
find it. I change the title around just a little bit every couple days, because it puts it back in Facebook search stuff, and it just helps kind of keep it at the top.
Mm-hmm.
But you should find it, and the whole idea that I had is, you know, you mail a letter on the 15th, and then following the 15th, you know, for a week, just emails, phone calls on whatever issue is important to you, Twitter, Facebook, any medium, you know, that you want to hit them with. And hit them on every topic that's important to you. You know, whether it's, you know, the abortion or it's GMOs or anything, just send them a message. Let them know that we're out here, because, they're ignoring us, and I'm fed up.
Take a number.
I mean, I am just absolutely fed up. And, you know, it's like a career to people now, and it was never intended to be a career. And I don't like seeing my money go for things that I don't agree with, especially when I know there are as many people that agree with me that disagree on what the actual thing is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You're getting me wound up now.
Yeah. So for one thing, you guys are quite a bit younger than I am. Glad to see that the younger crowd, and I think more and more, I mean, almost every day I'm finding that younger people are getting more involved in the issues here and understanding, you know, the grave situation that the country is in, and paying attention to what the Constitution is supposed to do for the citizens of this country. So excellent, excellent, excellent that you guys are involved and engaged here. Great that you're doing it in a medium that you can bring more young people into and give them the information as well. Your website's pretty easy to navigate. I'm kind of flipping around through it as we talk. And, I mean, you've got pretty much everything covered here. It's not hard to read. It's not hard to navigate. Everything's easy to get to.
Yeah, we tried to kind of mirror, like, a magazine or a newsletter or a newspaper. And if you look at it on an iPad or you look at it on a phone like an Android or iPhone or whatever, it's going to look pretty much the same. You know, you'll have your different sections. A lot of them aren't populated yet. Like I said, we're looking for help. If anybody out there wants to help, that'd be great. And, you know, you can just kind of scroll through and you have a lot of the same features on the phone as you do, you know, on the computer. I would also like to add that we have a couple other pages. One is dedicated to Agenda 21. It's called the No Agenda 21 page. And then the other one is Support Your Local Sheriff, because they're supporting you. So I'd just like to plug those, too.
Oh, good. Okay. So do you have, you know what, you guys should link them to your Patriot Nation page. I'm writing this down as we talk. Support Your Local Sheriff. We just had the sheriff thing in St. Charles County not too long ago. Okay. Awesome. So how can we find you guys other than going to the Patriot Nation and joining up? Can we all, individual partners, corporate partners, how does that work?
Really, anybody can just send an email to thepatriotnation@gmail.com or go to our website and hit us in the news section, in the submit your news section, and those will all go to the same place, and MD or I can field those and direct them the way they need to go.
Okay, and you have a user registration section, so are you encouraging folks to register into the Patriot Nation?
If they're comfortable, they can register. If not, they're at this point, they really don't have many more features outside of what, you know, someone just browsing onto the website does.
Okay.
But sure, yeah, and the information is going to go nowhere. I will
something we want to emphasize is he and I, Emmanuel and I, are both Internet security backgrounds. So anyone who signs up on the website, your email address is secure. You're not going to be spammed. We're not selling your email address. This is, and if you say, you know, I don't want to be on the mailing list anymore, it's deleted. It's file 13, and you'll never receive anything again. So it's, you know, I understand in this digital age, you know, you don't want to open your email and there'll be, you know, be mail bombed. That's not going to happen.
Is the federal government tracking you guys, and how can we know that we're not going to be tracked by the government?
Well, some of the things that I ran about, I would not guarantee you that the government isn't tracking us. So,
okay.
But hey, maybe they're taking a few tips.
Maybe they can hear us now. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. They've shut the show down a couple of times with web problems, I think. So who knows? Anyway, okay, so go to thepatriotnation.net and take a look at the website there. It's a great website, and you can find them on Facebook as well, The Patriot Nation, Support Your Local Sheriff and No Agenda 21. Go to those three websites and take a look at those. Put those on your bookmarks bar so that you can check them every day as part of your news scanning. I'm sure Caroline's doing that right now as we speak. And is there anything else, guys, that you want the folks to know?
Thanks so much for the support.
Thank you so much.
We're happy to help you.
Today there was a young man, 13 years of age, that got on the page and said he loved coming to our page because it opened his eyes to things that were going on, and he's been telling his friends at school. And my response to him was that it really excited me to see that because, you know, as Winston Churchill said, those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And the only way we are going to prevent slipping into the jaws of tyranny is if we pretty much undoctrinate these children that are in the public schools right now. And, you know, it's the future of our children and grandchildren that's at stake at this.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for the work that you're doing. Check back in with us and keep us posted when you get new developments, and we'll put you on, you know, we'll put you on and plug your site so that you can grow your base and, you know, get that word out there. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for your support.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and listen to Bill Federer.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order, because the global order is changing again.
and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. It always helps when you turn your microphone on when you're on the radio to talk to the folks. I just realized I played the last round of commercials twice, but, you know, hey, we're just flying by the seat of our pants here. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We just got off the phone with Emmanuel Goldstein and Matt, MD. Go to the Patriot Nation, folks. It's a great website, and we're really trying. They've already got a great following, but they've got a lot of great news and information there for you. So tell all your friends, and also look for them on Facebook as well. As I was talking about earlier, tomorrow is Independence Day. I don't know how many more Independence Days we're going to be celebrating if things keep going at the rate they're going. But this year, in 2013, we're celebrating Independence Day. And I thought it would be a really good idea to talk to the best person that I know of who knows more history about the United States than anybody I've ever met and who could speak more eloquently about it than anybody I've ever met than Bill Federer. So he was kind enough to talk to me earlier this week, and we had a nice long chat, and he gave me a complete rundown in only a way that Bill Federer can about how we got to the place where we became an independent country, independent citizenry with a great constitution. So I'm going to play that interview for you now, and we'll be back after we hear from Bill Federer. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And for our Independence Day broadcast, I thought it would be a great idea to have Bill Federer drop in and give us another great history lesson. Nobody knows more about American history than Bill Federer, and he's got a great book outlining the Independence Day history and all of the things that led up to that. And we're just going to touch base with him and let him fill us in on the details. Thanks for being with us today, Bill.
Well, thank you, Lisa. It's great to be with you.
And we really appreciate you dropping in. I thought it would be a great idea to have you on for our Independence Day broadcast, since I know no other historian more knowledgeable about American history. So what have you got for us today?
Well, the most common form of government in all of world history is dictators. And from the very beginning of recorded human history, around 3 or 4,000 B.C., there were pharaohs and Caesars and Kaisers, Sultans, Tsars, Maharajas, Genghis Khan, Julius Caesar. And no matter where you went in the world in these 60 centuries, power inevitably gravitates into the hands of one person. That's the norm. I believe it goes back to the fall in the garden and sin coming into the human DNA and Cain killing Abel and one king taking a kingdom from another king. And so you put some babies in a crib, one of them will take the rattle from the others. And you put some kids on a playground, one of them winds up taking the being the bully hog in the ball, and you put some people in the woods, one of them's the Indian chief, and put them in an inner city, one of them's the gang leader. So this is the norm, and if you're friends with the king, you're more equal. If you're not friends with the king, you're less equal, and if you're an enemy of the king, you're dead. It's called treason. So that's the norm. What's rare in history is people getting an opportunity to experiment with doing something different, like ruling themselves without a king. And the first nation that we have a record of that was ruled without a king was Israel. When they come out of Egypt, where the Pharaoh controlled everything, and they come into the promised land, and for 200 years they don't have a king. Anyway, after 200 years, they end up getting so out of control that everyone did what was right in their own eyes, and they ended up getting a King Saul. Athens, from around 600 to 300 BC, they had an experiment they called democracy, until Alexander the Great had conquered them. Rome, from about 509 B.C. to 27 B.C., had a republic with 600 senators, until one of the senators named Julius Caesar made himself dictator for life, and then they became the Roman Empire, where it's all owned by the emperor, so it was no longer a republic. And but you go throughout history, and you had some Italian city-states until Napoleon conquered them. You had a commonwealth in Iceland from 900 to 1200 until the king of Denmark conquered them. There was a republic in North Russia called Novgorod on the North Sea, and they would gather in the town square and shout for their leader, and whoever got the loudest shout was elected until Ivan the Terrible of Moscow. Moscow, conquered them and killed 60,000 of them, and incorporated Novgorod into Russia. And then you have the Dutch Republic, Seven United Netherlands, and until Napoleon conquered what was left of them. And then finally you come to the British Empire. And they had a short republic for about 15 years when the Puritans took over. But they came back with Charles II and finally worked their way up to King George III. And the King of England was the most powerful monarch in world history. The British Empire eventually had 13 million square miles and a half a billion people. All of India, which is a quarter of the world's population right there, they had Hong Kong and New Zealand and Australia and British Guyana and, of course, Canada and then the Americas, and then they had, you know, parts of Africa. The sun never set on the British Empire, and here comes along America, and we decide we're going to break away. Well, a little background is there were challenging empires. There was the Dutch for a while until they were the Dutch and the English teamed up against Spain. Once they were successful in, you know, breaking that monopoly, the British decided to go after the Dutch. And so it sort of became a real tug of war between the French and the English. And so they both had global empires. The French had areas of Africa, and they had French Indonesia and, you know, Vietnam, Cambodia area. They had French Guyana. And so these were two global empires. Plus they had originally all of Canada and then all of the Louisiana territory, everything west of the Appalachians and east of the Rockies. And so we had the French and the English start the first global war, and it's called the War of 1812. The French and Indian War in America, and then in Europe it's called the Seven Years' War. Anyway, the British win, and they end up wanting to leave troops on American soil to prevent there from being any more problems. But they didn't have any barracks to leave these troops in, and so they get the wild idea that they're going to put the troops in your house. And so these troops would just go up to people's houses and quarter in the house. They would come in and live in your house, eat your food, and sleep in your bed, and you would have to sleep in the attic or the basement or the barn. And it's called quartering. And the Americans in Boston gathered in 1770, and there was a mob protesting, and the British fired into the mob and killed a bunch of them. They killed Crispus Attucks, who was an African-American who was one of the first to die in the Revolutionary conflict. Then the King of England decided he was going to tax the colonies to pay for the troops. So not only do you have the policemen, you know, living in your home, you've got to pay extra taxes to the government to pay for these guys. And so they passed the tea tax and the sugar tax and the stamp tax, all these taxes. And finally in 1773, the colonists decided they've had enough of this, and they go down to protest the taxes by throwing 342 chests of British East India tea into the harbor, and this is known as the Boston Tea Party. Well, the King of England doesn't like the Tea Party movement, and he decides to punish those that participated in the Tea Party movement, like targeting them. he decides to blockade Boston's harbor on June 1st, 1774, to starve them into submission. Sort of like using the power of the government to go after these Tea Party groups. In the neighboring state, colony of Virginia, there is Thomas Jefferson, and he decides to propose a day of fasting, and he writes this, and it is introduced into the Virginia legislature by Robert Carter Nicholas. It passes unanimously with the support of Patrick Henry, Richard Henry Lee, George Mason, and it says, "This House, being deeply impressed with the apprehension of the great dangers to be derived to British America from the hostile invasion of the city of Boston in our sister colony of Massachusetts, deem it highly necessary that the said first day of June be set apart by the members of this House as a day of fasting, humiliation, and prayer." Well, they gather that day and they march down the street to the Bruton Parish Church, and they fast all day. George Washington writes in his diary, June 1st, 1774, went to church, fasted all day. Well, the Virginia governor is Lord Dunmore, views this day of fasting as some kind of veiled protest against the king, because it's the king's policies that is blockading Boston's harbor. And so this Lord Dunmore decides to disband the Virginia legislature, the House of Burgesses. He fires them, tells them to go home. Well, they don't go home. They go down the street to Raleigh Tavern. And in the back room, they plot to have a Continental Congress to meet in Philadelphia 3 months later. And sure enough, they meet. And then 2 years after that, the Continental Congress votes for independence. So we may not have had a vote for independence, and we may not have had a Continental Congress if had it not been for Thomas Jefferson proposing a day of fasting and prayer, June 1st, 1774. Well, they do meet in September of 1774 in Philadelphia, Carpenter's Hall, and there's a motion to open with prayer. And some of the Presbyterians don't want to hear a prayer from an Episcopalian, who doesn't want to hear a prayer from a Quaker or an Anabaptist or a Congregationalist, and it begins to get so divided before they get started that Sam Adams stands up. And he says, I'm no bigot. I can hear a prayer of any man of piety who at the same time is a friend of his country. And so they get the Anglican minister of the biggest church in Philadelphia. It's Reverend Mr. Jacob Duché. And he opens with prayer. And they read from the 35th Psalm, and then he breaks out into an extemporaneous prayer, which John Adams said, filled the bosom of every person present. I must confess I never heard a better prayer. After that is when, later in Philadelphia, when they have the Declaration of Independence, that same Jacob Duché goes back across the church, opens up his English Common Prayer Book, and he takes a pen and he scratches out every place where it says to pray for the king, and he puts in pray for the United States of America. And so this sets a ripple effect that the church was taking a stand against this concentrated power of this monarch. Anyway, so that was September of 1774. In the beginning of 1775, the governor of Massachusetts, the provincial governor, in other words, the royal governor is there by the king, and the provincial one is the ones that the people of the colonies vote in. And so they have a Massachusetts Provincial Congress led by John Hancock, the richest man in Boston, and he signs off on a proclamation of prayer. And he says, in circumstances dark as these, it becomes us as men and Christians to reflect that whilst every prudent measure should be taken to ward off impending judgments, the 11th of May should be set apart as a day of public fasting, prayer, and humiliation to confess our sins. Well, that was April 15th of 1775. April 19th of 1775, in Massachusetts, the British decide they're going to arrest John Hancock and Sam Adams, and they send troops to Concord and Lexington to get them. And so there was an arrangement to warn them ahead of time, and somebody was going to stand in the belfry of a church and hang a lantern, one, if the British were going to be coming toward Lexington and Concord by land, and two, if by sea. And so they put the lanterns up there, and they let them know, and so the guys, Paul Revere and a couple others, get on horses and take off running. They see the lanterns, they take off riding as fast as they can to warn the British are coming to get John Hancock and Sam Adams and all their guns. And so they ride over to Lexington and Concord, and that is where the shot is heard round the world. That was the poem that Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote. He says, by this rude bridge that arched the flood, the flag of April's breeze unfurled. Here once the embattled farmers stood and fired the shot heard round the world. And so they were standing up to the most powerful empire in the world, the British Empire, these ragtag guys. The same day, April 19th, 1775, the Connecticut governor is John Trumbull. He declares a day of fasting. God would graciously pour out his Holy Spirit upon us to the thorough repentance and effectual reformation of our iniquities, that they may not be our ruin, and so on and so forth. So New England sets apart April 19th as Patriots Day. And June, 2 months after the Battle of Lexington and Concord. Now John Hancock, who avoided getting arrested, he's now the president of the Continental Congress. And John Hancock does what on June 12th? Declare a day of fasting and prayer. Congress, considering the great present critical and alarming calamitous state, do earnestly recommend Thursday, the 12th of July, 1775, be observed by the inhabitants of the English colonies as a day of public humiliation, fasting, and prayer, that we may with united hearts and voices unfeignedly confess and deplore our sins. It is recommended to Christians of all denominations to assemble for public worship and abstain from servile labor on said day. Well, what happens next? Well, that was June of 1775, the beginning of it, June 12th. Well, what happens on June 17th, just a few days later? The British decide not only are they going to blockade Boston's harbor, they are going to inhabit Boston. And so is the Battle of Bunker Hill. Are you still, is this following a timeline that's understandable?
You're doing great. This is an amazing recounting of history, and what strikes me is the more things change, the more things stay the same.
They really do. It's interesting how human nature repeats itself. So don't shoot till you see the whites of their eyes. That was the order given June 17, 1775 by Colonel William Prescott. He was commanding the troops at Breed's Hill, across from Bunker Hill, which was guarding the north entrance to Boston's harbor. Now, providentially, this being the first use of British naval ships during the war, the British inadvertently brought the wrong size cannonballs. So normally they would have had their ships there and pounded away at the American entrenchments with cannonballs and then unload their troops and march up and do a little mop-up, you know, of who's still alive. Well, since they brought the wrong size cannonballs, the British General Howe had to disembark 2,300 British soldiers and send them up the hill with bayonets fixed. Twice the Americans repelled them, and had they not split their gunpowder, because the guy, you know, somebody that wanted to have half the gunpowder in Cambridge, but if they would have had all the gunpowder there, they could have killed them all. But nevertheless, the Americans ran out of gunpowder, and the British were able to take the hill. But nevertheless, 1,000 British were killed and 500 Americans. And this let the Americans know that they could feel their own against the finest military in the world. The same day, 300 miles away, the Continental Congress decides to draft George Washington as the commander-in-chief. And he refuses to take a salary. And he writes a will for his wife, and he takes off, and he writes to her, I therefore confidently rely on that providence which is heretofore preserved and been bountiful to me. So July of 1775, there's John Adams, and he writes to his wife on July 12th. He said, we have appointed a continental fast. Millions will be upon their knees at once before the great Creator, imploring his forgiveness and blessing and smiles on American counsel and arms. And so July 19th, 1775, the journals of the Continental Congress record agreed. The Continental Congress or the Congress meet here tomorrow morning, half after 9, in order to attend divine service at Mr. Jacob Duché's church. We remember him. And in the afternoon, they will go to attend divine service at Dr. Allison's church. So they were doing their fasting and praying. And on time, the governor of Connecticut, John Trumbull, writes to George Washington. He says, may the God of the armies of Israel shower down the blessings of his divine providence in the day of battle and danger. So the British now have occupied Boston. They burn Cambridge. And there's a 25-year-old bookseller in Boston who had his bookshop trashed by the British, and his name is Henry Knox. So he and his wife Lucy flee, and he joins George Washington, who's 43 years old. And this 25-year-old Henry Knox has this idea of going to Fort Ticonderoga, 300 miles away, and dragging down 57 huge cannons in the middle of winter, in the freezing snow, and it takes him 3 months. And he fills these big sleds, and as they're going across a frozen lake, the ice wasn't thick enough, and one of them falls through, and the men of Albany, New York, help him fish out the cannon, and he finally drags these 25 years there, and the British had inadvertently failed to take that position. And now they wake up on March 5th, 1776, and the British General Howe looks up and remarks, "The rebels did more in one night than my whole army could do in 1 month." And Washington had even taken a bunch of logs and painted them black and stuck those up there, too, to make it look like even more cannons on the hill. So the next day, March 6, 1776, George Washington gives the order. He says, "Thursday, the 7th, being set apart by this province of Massachusetts as a day of fasting, prayer, and humiliation to implore the Lord, giver of victory, to pardon our manifold sins and transgressions." Now, there's the Battle of Saratoga. And so we're talking June of 1777. There is a British general, Johnny Burgoyne, and he lands in Canada, and he's coming down, and he makes a treaty with the Mohawk Indians to commit terrorist attacks. So here's the government, sort of like a Fast and Furious, you know, where the government supplies arms to the drug gangs. So to do the, here was General Johnny Burgoyne, a British general, having these Indians do terrorist attacks against the Americans. And they're, you know, killing and butchering, and the Americans are just befuddled. We don't know what to do. But then, as they get close to some of the encampments, settlements, there's loyalists, but the Indians cannot tell the difference between a white loyalist to Britain and a white patriot in America. And they go to the one little settlement, and there is a sweet girl named Jane McCrae who had long, beautiful hair, and she was engaged to a British-American loyalist named David Jones. And he kisses her goodbye and goes off and joins General Johnny Burgoyne, and, you know, I'm sure he told her, "I'll be back. We'll get rid of these rebels," you know. Well, as they're getting close, and I guess he's probably getting excited, he's going to see his fiance again. As they're getting close, one night the Indians come into the camp with the scalps that they got from their outings the night before, and he sees this one scalp that's really long, pretty, beautiful hair that he recognizes as his fiance. Sure enough, they shot Jane McCrae and scalped her. That was his fiance. And so this causes an uproar in the British camp that these, you know, terrorists are terrorizing the wrong groups. And so Burgoyne calls a meeting with the Mohawk Indians and tells them to tone it down. Well, the Indians only know on and off. They're either at war or they're at peace. They don't know any limited warfare where you fight with your hand behind your back type of thing, you know. And so they get offended and leave. And they leave Burgoyne in the middle of the New York forest, and all of a sudden he's blind. He doesn't know where he's at. He doesn't know where the Americans are at. He doesn't know any reconnaissance. He doesn't know where the water is. He doesn't know anything. He's just stuck there. And so this gives suddenly the Americans the advantage. And we capture the Battle of Saratoga, 6,000 British troops. And this is considered a major turning point in the war. And this convinces King Louis the 16th of France that maybe the Americans can win this thing, and that eventually causes him to send his navy over to help us. And when word comes of the victory, Washington writes to his brother, "I most devoutly congratulate my country and every well-wisher to the cause on this signal stroke of providence." And the Continental Congress declares the first National Day of Thanksgiving, November 1st, 1777, that with one heart and one voice, the good people may express the grateful feelings of their hearts, join in penitent confession of their manifold sins, that it may please God through the merits of Jesus Christ mercifully to forgive and blot out their sins, and under the providence of Almighty God secure the victory, so forth. Roger Sherman, who was a signer of the Declaration, said, "This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes." Anyway, so that was the October of 1777. So we've gone from the Boston Massacre to the Boston Tea Party to blockading the Boston Harbor to the cannons on Dorchester Heights to the New York, and then Washington 6 months losing, and then they winning the Battle of Trenton and Princeton. Then we win the Battle of Saratoga, and then we come up to Valley Forge. And so this is the end of 1777, beginning of 1778. 2,500 Americans died, exposed to death of exposure, hunger, and disease, while the British are living in comfort in Philadelphia. And anyway, don't have time to tell all the stories.
Yeah.
But,
go ahead.
Yes,
go right ahead. I'm enjoying this immensely. Go ahead.
Okay, well, the British are in Philadelphia, and Washington is there in Valley Forge. A Prussian officer, somebody from, you know, the killing machines over there in Prussian Germany, a Prussian officer shows up offering his services to Washington. His name is Baron von Steuben, and he can speak, you know, German and French, but there's somebody in America that can speak French and English, and so he gives his orders in French, and then it's translated from French to English, and he trains and drills the Americans on how to fight like a real army, and not just, you know, this ragtag militia type thing. And anyway, I could go on and on, but they, you know, have another day of prayer and fasting, April 12th of 1778. The Honorable Congress, having thought proper to recommend the United States to observe a day of fasting, humiliation, prayer, one time with one voice, that the righteous dispensation to Providence may be acknowledged, and the general directs that that day should be most religiously observed by the Army. And Washington says, to the distinguished character of patriot, it should be our highest glory to laud the more distinguished character of Christian. And so now we're coming up on 1779, and the Continental Congress asks the states to declare a day of prayer. And so who is the governor of Virginia in 1779 but Thomas Jefferson? And so Thomas Jefferson gives this proclamation. He said, Congress hath thought proper to recommend to the several states a day of public and solemn thanksgiving to Almighty God for his mercies, and of prayer for the continuance of his favor, that he would go forth with our host and crown our army with victory, that he would grant his church the plentiful effusions of his divine grace and pour out his Holy Spirit on all ministers of the gospel, that he would bless and prosper the means of education and spread the light of Christian knowledge through the remotest corners of the earth. I do therefore issue this proclamation appointing a day of public and solemn thanksgiving and prayer to Almighty God, signed Thomas Jefferson, November 11, 1779. Anyway, Washington, then, we're into the spring of 1780. And he gives another order to his troops. Congress, having been pleased by their proclamation to declare another day of fasting, humiliation, and prayer, he says there should be no labor or recreation on that day. So now we're into August of 1780. And Benedict Arnold, he is the hero of the Battle of Saratoga, because he led a charge, you know, along the flank, but he sort of disobeyed an order to do that. Everybody, you know, knew that he was vindicated because we won the war, but he had to go through the court-martial procedure. They found him innocent, but it was sort of an annoyance for him, and his wife felt like these Americans really didn't appreciate her husband, and so she begins to meet with a British spy named John Andre, and she finally convinces her husband, Benedict Arnold, to meet the British spy, John Andre, and Benedict Arnold gives in and agrees to betray West Point for $20,000, 20,000 pounds, which is equivalent to about $1 million. So West Point is on the Hudson River. The Hudson River goes north and south, cutting New York in half and cutting America in half. You have New England on one side and the middle southern colonies on the other. So if you can control the Hudson River and if you can control West Point, you can control America. And just so happens, Washington was planning on visiting West Point the next day. So Benedict Arnold meets with the spy, John Andre, gives him a map of West Point. He's sneaking back dressed as a civilian to the British lines. And then the sun comes up and here's Benedict Arnold. He's waiting to have breakfast with Washington, who is inspecting the troops. Washington's running late because he's inspecting the troops. And meanwhile, somebody tells Benedict Arnold that his spy got captured. Sure enough, some Americans saw this guy sneaking through the woods dressed as a civilian, and they say, "Stop. Who are you? What are you doing?" And his answers didn't convince him. They searched him once, twice. And the third time, they made him take off his boots, and they found in the heel of his boot, folded up, a map of West Point. And so what do? They arrest him, and they're going to march him back into Benedict Arnold's office. And so when word comes to Benedict Arnold, here he is about to meet with Washington, and he takes off, and he flees, and he gets on a ship called the Vulture, and he joins the British Army. And sure enough, later he actually fights the Americans and kills Americans. And, you know, Marquis de Lafayette, the French guy, is fighting Benedict Arnold and on our soil. And so anyway, Washington is shocked. And he gives this proclamation, this order, 1780, September 26th. Treason of the blackest dye was yesterday discovered. General Arnold, who commanded at West Point, lost every sentiment of honor and public and private obligation, was about to deliver up that important post to our enemy. Such an event must have given the American cause a deadly wound, if not fatal stab. Happily, the treason had been timely discovered to prevent the fatal misfortune. The providential train of circumstances which led to its discovery affords the most convincing proof that the liberties of America are the object of divine protection. The president of Yale, Ezra Stiles, writes, "But a providential miracle detected the conspiracy of Arnold even in the critical moment of the execution of that infernal plot, in which the body of the American army then at West Point and His Excellency George Washington himself were to have been rendered into the hands of the enemy." So the Continental Congress decides they're going to declare a day of thanksgiving. And they write this, and this is October 18th of 1780, so this is like just 2 or 3 weeks after the attempt to betray West Point. So the Continental Congress says, "In the late remarkable interposition of His watchful providence in the rescuing of the person of our commander-in-chief and the army from imminent dangers at the moment when treason was ripened for execution, it is therefore recommended a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to confess our unworthiness and to offer fervent supplications to God of all grace to cause the knowledge of Christianity to spread over all the earth." That was the Continental Congress, October 18, 1780. So what happens next, 1781? It's the Battle of Cowpens, and this was considered the strategic turning point of the war. Cowpens is where you got cows and pens, right? So it's Cowpens. And if you've seen the movie The Patriot with Mel Gibson, There is that last big battle scene with a bunch of ragtag militias standing in a field, and the American General Daniel Morgan talks to these guys and says, "Look, just give me 2 shots at the British, and then you can get scared and run away over the hill." Over the hill is, you know, some trees, and then behind the trees is the river. Now, in battle strategy, you never fight a battle without leaving yourself a way of retreat. And so you don't want to have a river behind you when you're fighting a battle, because if you're losing, there's nowhere to run away to. And so the British have their Colonel Tarleton. He's known as the Butcher because he would kill, you know, innocent people and non-combatants and women and children. And so he is riding along with his dragoons, these horses with their, you know, big tall black hats and their sabers. They're like razor blade swords. And he sees the American militia standing there backed up to the river with a little hill behind them. But he sees them and he goes, "You fools. First of all, we're the toughest troops the British have, the dragoons. It was like the F-16. I mean, these guys could ride in, you know, galloping on the horses, and these other guys are on foot. I mean, they got these saber swords. I mean, and it's so tough, like, you fools, what are you doing?" So he takes the bait, and he charges. And the Americans fire one, and then they hurry up and reload. And then they fire a second time, and then they run over the hill. And Tarleton and his men follow them over the hill, only to be met at point-blank range by 400 battle-hardened, crack American Continental soldiers. And they fire away, and they kill in an instant over 100 of these British soldiers, these dragoons, and the rest of them just throw up their arms and surrender. And so Daniel Morgan captures over 800 of them. And then he hightails it out of there, and he wants to get back to Virginia, because this is in North Carolina, and he's riding, he's making his men go as fast as they can, and they cross the Catawba River, and 2 hours later, the British go up to the river, and And before they can start crossing, there's a flash flood, and the river rises, and it delays the British for a half a day. And then the Americans are racing as fast as they can. They get to the Yadkin River. And so Cornwallis, the British commander, he is trashing his supply wagons, his cannons, his, you know, anything that's not necessary. He's just trashing it along the way. And he is rushing, and he gets to the Dan River and watches the Americans get out the other side. But before he can start crossing, there's another flash flood, and the river suddenly rises, and he's got to put it off. And then they chase him again, and he's trashing more of his supplies, and he finally at midnight gets to the Dan River, watching the Americans get out the other side, and another flash flood. And the British commander, Henry Clinton, writes, "Here the Royal Army was again stopped by a sudden rise of the waters, which had only just fallen almost miraculously to let the enemy over." Washington wrote later, "We have abundant reasons to thank Providence for its many favorable interpositions in our behalf. It has at times been my only dependence, for all of the resources seem to have failed us." Well, Cornwallis, he has done what? He's trashed all his supplies, but he's got a whole army, and so he's ordered to wait at Yorktown by the York River, near Chesapeake Bay, for British ships to bring him some more supplies. But finally, the French send their navy, King Louis XVI. The navy has one of the largest naval battles called the Battle of the Capes, and they are able to keep the British supply ships from coming to Cornwallis' rescue. And so George Washington, with 3,000 French troops from De Grasse, 6,000 French troops from General Rochambeau, he has Generals Benjamin Lincoln, Baron von Steuben, Mordecai Gist, Henry Knox, John Peter Muhlenberg, Marquis de Lafayette, 17,000 American and British troops, and they surround Cornwallis, who surrenders on October 19, 1781. And Ezra Stiles, the president of Yale, writes, "Who but God could have ordained the critical arrival of the Gallic fleet?" And Gaelic is the old word for French. And so who could have ordained the critical arrival of the French fleet so as to assist in the siege of Yorktown? I mean, the timing of it was just perfect. "Should we not ascribe to a supreme energy the wise generalship displayed by General Greene, who was with Daniel Morgan, leaving the roving Cornwallis to pursue his helter-skelter, ill-fated march into Virginia? It is God who had raised up for us a powerful ally, a chosen army, and a naval force, who sent Rochambeau to fight side by side with Washington in the Battle of Yorktown." Washington writes, "To diffuse the general joy through every breast, the general orders divine service to be performed tomorrow in the several brigades. The commander-in-chief earnestly recommends troops not on duty should universally attend with that gratitude of heart which the recognition of such astonishing interposition of Providence demands." The next year, the Continental Congress, it's now called the Congress of the Confederation, they pass another day of prayer. They write, "It being the indispensable duty of all nations to offer up their supplication to Almighty God, the United States and Congress assembled do hereby recommend to the inhabitants of these states in general to observe the last of Thursday of November as a day of solemn thanksgiving to God for all his mercies." Well, they negotiate back and forth, and in September of 1783, have the Treaty of Paris that ends the Revolutionary War. And for those not familiar, the Treaty of Paris starts off, "In the name of the most holy and undivided Trinity, it having pleased divine providence," and so forth. So the very treaty that ended the Revolutionary War starts off acknowledging the most holy and undivided Trinity. And an interesting quote from Ronald Reagan, he says, "In 1775, the Continental Congress proclaimed the first National Day of Prayer. In 1783, the Treaty of Paris officially ended the long, weary Revolutionary War, during which a National Day of Prayer had been proclaimed every spring for 8 years. And now John Hancock, he is back to being the state governor of Massachusetts. And he says this, November 8th of 1783, just 2 months after the treaty with Paris, Treaty of Paris. He says, "The citizens of these United States have every reason for praise and gratitude to God for their salvation. I do appoint the 11th of December as the day recommended by Congress to the states to be religiously observed as a day of thanksgiving and prayer, that all the people may then assemble to celebrate that he hath been pleased to continue to us the light of the blessed gospel, that we should offer up fervent supplications to cause pure religion and virtue to flourish and to fill the world with his glory. But anyway, I could go on and on, but these are all stories out of the book, Miracles in American History. Amazing stories of answered prayer in our past. And I go through the writing of the Declaration of Independence, and then the War of 1812, the Barbary Pirate Wars, you know, the Civil Wars, a cholera epidemic in 1849 when the President Zachary Taylor has a day of fasting and prayer. There's when Woodrow Wilson entered into World War I, he has a day of fasting and prayer. World War II, FDR passes out Gideon's New Testament and Book of Psalms to all the soldiers in World War II. Just 70 years ago, a Democrat president is passing out New Testaments and Book of Psalms. You wonder what book would be passed out today. I mean, here we are homosexualizing the military and telling them they have to perform gay marriages, you know. When Apollo 13 was lost in space, right, when the oxygen tank exploded, Nixon had a day of prayer for them. But a fascinating overview of history and America and times of crises that we were in, and our leaders that had faith and courage, and for God's purposes, our country was spared. And it's important for us to remember these stories because we're facing some crises today, and we need men and women with faith and courage now.
Absolutely. Fascinating indeed. Don't forget, over this wonderful Independence Day celebration weekend, to go to AmericanMinute.com and sign up for your American Minute email every day from Bill Federer. Take a look at his book page. Miracles in American History is the number one bestseller on that list. There's a long, long list of other publications by Bill Federer. Thank you so much for that incredible retelling of American history on this Independence Day, Bill. I can't thank you enough for being on with us.
Well, thank you, and I'd love to be on anytime, Lisa. You're doing a great work.
Thank you so much, and we'll talk again soon. Have a great Independence Day. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
I am back. It's almost all over. We've had a great Independence Day show. Isn't Bill Federer great? I just love listening to him. I could listen to him forever, yeah. And nobody knows more information about American history than Bill Federer. What do you think about that, Caroline?
Yeah, he's very fascinating.
So
he, you know, is very knowledgeable about Islam too. So it's interesting to hear him talk about Islam as well.
Yeah, actually, I do have one of his books right here on my bookshelf. It's a great book, actually. It's What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran. It's a great historic retelling of about Islam and how it grew and how it played a part in the development of the world and where it's going and what is in the Quran and what it really means. If you haven't read it yet, you need to run right out and get a copy of that book, because that book tells you more than just about anything about what we're really dealing with behind the scenes. The stuff that the mainstream media won't tell you, it puts into perspective all the political correctness that you've been taught about what Islam is. It's just an incredible book. You need to pick it up. Okay, a couple things I want to hit on before we leave. Secret Santa. I played the commercial twice. You've heard it twice already during the show, but we're halfway through the year now, and we're starting to think about the holiday season, believe it or not. Times were kind of tough last year for folks. The job market wasn't any better than it is today. Don't think that it's going to get any better by Christmas, and there are a lot of struggling families in Missouri. And in order for them to put a Christmas together for their kids, it's kind of tough, folks. So what we did here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition was that we took the generous donations of folks here in Missouri, and we went out on Christmas Eve, several of us, in different parts of the state, and went to stores and paid off the layaway accounts of folks who had toys and presents and things in their layaway accounts who it didn't look like they were going to pay them off in time to be able to give them to their kids. So we went and did it for them and helped 15 families across the state. We raised $1,000 last year, and we helped 15 families make some Christmas magic for their kids on Christmas morning. So what we're trying to do this year is double that amount. We'd like to raise $2,000 and help at least twice as many families this year. Times are just, it's a scary world out there. There's no reason to let the kids be affected by what's going on. Let's keep Christmas alive one more year for these kids. Send us some money. Go to the Missouri Grassroots Coalition .org webpage, hit the Secret Santa tab. You can send us any amount of money, $5, $10, $1, $20, whatever you can afford to send us, PayPal, check or money order, and every dime of that money goes to the Secret Santa Fund and gets spent on this initiative. We don't have administrative overhead. We don't use it to pay for anything else other than this promotion that we do every year. So if you have the ability to send us a few dollars, send us a few dollars for a Secret Santa promo. The end of August is quickly approaching, and if you did not have the opportunity to attend the Lauren Spivak seminar that we had at the Family Vision Library, the Free Market Warrior, you missed a treat. And it was really entertaining, folks. I know it doesn't sound like it would be a lot of fun to sit for two evenings and listen to somebody talk about how free market principles drive this economy and shape America, but I'm telling you, it was amazing. It was historically full of great information, entertaining information. It's great for you to bring your kids to. If you have teenage kids who might be missing the boat in the kind of information that they're getting at school, you need to bring them to this. I took my teenage kids to this, and my daughter, and she loved it. It was great. So anyway, Lauren Spivak is coming back to the Family Vision Library in St. Charles County, Missouri, on August 29th and 30th. He's going to continue what he started here a couple of months ago. If you missed it, don't feel like you can't attend the continuation, because he fills in all the gaps and makes it entertaining, and you won't feel like you've missed a thing. So come to the second half of this presentation. Lauren Spivak, the Free Market Warrior. Look for information about that up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, the 29th and 30th at the Family Vision Library. Also want you to know, all of these broadcasts are podcasted. So we have links posted up on the radio page at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and I also have a radio page at culturevigilante.wordpress.com. You can go back and listen to any of these great podcasts. We have a lot of information that we've put out over the last it's been a little over a year now that we've been broadcasting here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition or Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we've interviewed candidates in the various elections. We've had great people on several times. Bill Federer has been on the program here. Usama Dakdok has been on talking about Islam, and I mean a very timely topic. They ousted Morrissey today. If you haven't heard that on the news anywhere, they overthrew the government, and Mohamed Morsi is out. So great information, Usama. We need to have him on and kind of have him debrief us on all of that information. Usama is a Coptic Christian, born in Egypt, grew up there. He's a Christian now in America, trying to educate the folks on what real Islam is. And if you haven't heard Usama talk before, he's just fabulous. Anyway, we do have podcasts of Usama. Go back to the Missouri Grassroots Coalition radio page or Culture Vigilante and look up those radio podcasts. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me, Culture Vigilante, or Missouri Grassroots Coalition. We're on Facebook as well. Look for me also on politichicks.tv. I write several articles there a couple times a month. On politichicks.tv, and they not only do I write for them, they have a whole slew of writers from across the country and all very important and topical information that goes on there every day. Go to the Missouri Grassroots Coalition.org webpage and join there. Give us your name, give us your address. We send out information on things that are going on in Missouri and timely topics and things about Agenda 21, all kinds of issues that you'd want to be involved in. So if you join our organization, we can inform you. You can also sign up for Grassfire Alerts, where we'll send you a text message when really important, timely topics happen and you need to be notified right away. That's probably just about covers it. Caroline, I hope you have a great Independence Day tomorrow. What have you got planned? Are you going to go down to Care St. Louis?
No, I don't have any plans. I'm just planning on just taking it easy and enjoying the great news regarding the Blue Way.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. Yeah. I've been while we were listening to Bill Federer, I've been reading all the emails that are coming through on your email loop. So everybody's pretty charged.
Yeah, it's exciting because, you know, I mean, it's so exciting to be able to celebrate a victory because we get so few, you know. So
yeah.
Hopefully this will recharge a lot of people's batteries and, you know, we can conquer even bigger and better things. So
absolutely.
Happy Independence Day to Egypt and happy Independence Day to America.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's keep it up. Let's make sure that we're here next year celebrating Independence Day. Maybe take a lesson from the folks in Egypt on about standing up for the government that they want. That's what our country was founded on, and that's what we're celebrating tomorrow. So, very good. And with that, I think we will wrap it up for this week. Great. Thank you so much to Bill Federer. He's such a nice man. I just love talking to him. He's so pleasant, and he's always so willing to come on. And thanks to Emmanuel and MD for coming on, telling us about the Patriot Nation. And if you have an opportunity, go to thepatriotnation.net. And thanks to Mark Baker, and we're going to keep an eye on his situation there and keep you posted on the updates in Michigan with his family farm. And until next week, have a great Independence Day, folks, and we'll see you here next Wednesday evening.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.